We're taking a look east again for this episode because today I'm going to tell you all about Pettigrew State Park. Welcome to the NC Everything Podcast. I'm your host, Curtis, and this is the bi-weekly show where I talk about everything that has anything to do with North Carolina. Welcome back, everybody, or if this is your first time listening, just welcome. I'm glad you're all here. I've been kind of dragging my feet this week, putting this episode together, mainly because it's been a really hard week at work, and I was just plain tired. And so it's Friday night. And this episode goes out in the morning. It's pretty late and I'm trying to get it done. And since it's dark outside and cold and the wind's blowing, 25, 30 miles an hour, I'm inside. And if you're watching on YouTube, you can see that I'm inside by the poor lighting, which speaking of that, if you're listening and you want to watch, check the description down below and there'll be a link there for the YouTube channel. Also, if you keep looking at the description, you also see a link to the Facebook group where you can get even more NC Everything. There's also a link to Tasting NC, a show I do with my wife, where we taste everything that has anything to do with North Carolina. And finally, if you want to reach out and say hey or suggest an episode, there's an email address in the description too. If you don't feel like going to the description, that's thencEverythingPodcast@gmail.com. In regards to all you who do listen, I do want to address something. If I hadn't really thought about this, it slipped my mind, but because of the crappy Wi-Fi out here in the country, and I am so far out of town, most of the time the podcast won't hit the podcast players until Monday morning. The YouTube channel, usually the podcast is up on Saturday. The reason that is because I can upload the YouTube channel while I'm in town, running errands. But I need my laptop to upload the podcast to the audio player. And since I spend about 10 hours a day on a laptop, it's pretty easy to do at work. So I apologize for the gap. I know it may not seem fair, and I know it sucks. But I hope that's not a deal breaker or anything. But for those of you who listen on podcast players, the show will come out pretty much every Monday, unless I'm lucky. Now, that's pretty much enough of that, so let's get into the content. Pettigrew State Park. It's named after Confederate General James Johnston Pettigrew. He lived in the area. And Confederate General Pettigrew, he led the North Carolina guys during Pickett's charge at Gettysburg. So some of you may not know that even though Pickett was a general in the Army of Northern Virginia, the famous Pickett's Charge was conducted by a bunch of North Carolina boys, mostly North Carolina boys. So Pettigrew, he led the biggest, group of North Carolina boys during Pickett's Charge. Actually, he ended up getting hurt at the Battle of Gettysburg, and he died from his wounds at age 35. Eventually, North Carolina gained control of the land that would become Pettigrew State Park. And in 1939, Pettigrew became the sixth state park in North Carolina. The biggest feature in Pettigrew State Park is probably Lake Phelps, or it is Lake Phelps, and Lake Phelps is a Carolina bay. By the way, I forgot to mention that Pettigrew State Park is located in Washington County, but just a portion of it is on the western side of Tyrell County. Anyway, Lake Phelps is the second largest Carolina bay lake in the state. Lake Waccamaw is the largest Carolina bay lake. By the way, if you're wondering what a Carolina bay lake is, it's a mysterious natural lake. Nobody really knows how they came to be. They're in eastern North Carolina, and some of them are in eastern South Carolina. And you can hear a whole episode on the Carolina bays if you listen to episode 46. But Lake Phelps is a 16,000-acre lake. It's pretty shallow. The average depth is 4.5 feet. And they believe it was formed about 38,000 years ago. It was once known as the Great Eastern Dismal and Great Alligator Dismal. That's all my notes say. The Eastern, Great Eastern Dismal and Great Alligator Dismal. I don't know if that's lake or swamp, but tradition says a group of hunters, and I've read this before, tradition says a bunch of hunters kind of went out into the woods. Most of them got kind of creeped out in the woods and they turned back. But a guy named Benjamin Tarkington, he climbs up a tree to kind of figure out where he's at, and he sees a lake off in the distance. Well, while he's still up in the tree, he tells his companion, a guy named Josiah Phelps, he sees some water out there. So Josiah Phelps, he starts running in the direction that this guy Tarkington told him to, and he runs into the water. And since he was first in the water and he discovered this technically, he decided to name the lake right then and there, and he named it Lake Phelps. Now, like most of the other bays, Lake Phelps was a landlocked lake until the 18th century, and that's when white settlers came in. They built plantations. They started cutting canals from the lake to the Scuppernong River. And, you know, then with the canals, it opened up farmland. And now I'll tell you about Somerset Place. There's this company literally called the Lake Company. Well, they own about 100,000 acres of farmland around Lake Phelps. Well, they buy slaves from Africa in the 1790s, and they start digging. They're one of the ones that started digging the canals. They dig about 6 miles of canals that connected the lake to Scuppernong River. And like most canals, this was for transportation. They were trying to drain the lake out a little bit, and it was for crop irrigation. Now, as far as draining the lake out, I've talked before about bottomland. That dirt under the water is really fertile. So if they can get rid of the water, that opens up some really rich farmland. Well, in 1787, James or Josiah Collins, I couldn't figure out which one it was because multiple sources, but James or Josiah Collins, they founded the Somerset Place. That's the name of the plantation. He named it for his county of Somersetshire in England. Well, by 1865, the plantation was one of the largest plantations in the what they call the Upper South. So, you know, Alabama, Georgia, that's deep south. North Carolina is the Upper South. I don't know exactly where South Carolina fell in that. But Somerset Place was the largest in the Upper South. And I was reading about this place. It's not like any other plantation I've ever read about. It had a main house, which is pretty common. It had barns and stables, but it had a smokehouse, a dairy, had sawmills, a hospital, a chapel, and a school, all on this one plantation. And over 800 slaves lived here. But the Civil War came, and that was pretty much the end of Somerset Place. They really weren't able to maintain such a big plantation, so it kind of fell into disrepair. After this, it kind of went through several owners. Then in 1937, the Federal Farm Security Administration bought it. Today, Somerset Place is a historic site, occupying 8 acres. And it's weird to think that it was on 100,000 acres, and now today the historic site, which is inside Pettigrew State Park, is down to just 8 acres. All right, well, now we're going to jump to the summer of 1984 in regards to the history of Pettigrew State Park. There is a huge forest fire near Lake Phelps, and they used water out of the lake to fight the fire, and it lowered the water level. Then the rest of the year was pretty dry. It didn't rain hardly at all. So the lake level got low and stayed pretty low. Well, in the fall of 1984, some fishermen reported that they could see something in the lake. Turns out it was some historic artifacts. More specifically, it was clay pots and I lost my place. It was clay pots. They found, it says, some stone tools and weapons. I'm not exactly sure what they found, but I know over the years they have found a bunch of different arrowheads there, which I'll probably talk about some more here in a minute. In 1985, the experts, I don't know exactly who, they come out and start collecting these artifacts. You know, you can't just go along and start scraping up stuff, although people do. The experts come out and they start, you know, retrieving these artifacts. In November of 1985 is when they found the first dugout canoes, and these things are now a big feature of Pettigrew State Park. So they uncovered the first dugout canoe, and it was actually discovered by park personnel, not really by the experts. But after they found this first canoe, it really triggered a lot of research and archaeology around the lake, which still goes on today. It's a joint effort between the North Carolina Division of Park Recreation, East Carolina University, the North Carolina Division of Archives and History, the North Carolina Maritime Museum. But since all that started, they've found about 11,000 artifacts around Lake Phelps. So where did all these artifacts come from? Well, this part of the story goes back 11,000 years. People came to the lake for food, and they camped along the northern and western shores. And the northern and western shores, you may hear me say it a few times, the northern and western shores is where they found most of these artifacts. So people started coming to there, hunters and gatherers, just looking for food. This is where they made dugout, where they first started making dugout canoes, mainly for fishing, traveling across the lake. Well, ages passed by, and a lot of these dugout canoes, they became in disrepair. A lot of the artifacts broke, and they would kind of just toss them out into the lake. And as the lake, you know, the water levels come and gone, rose and fell, it eventually covered these artifacts up. Well, then, in the same way that it was covered up, it was uncovered. So the waves kind of washing back and forth slowly uncovered these artifacts. Then when the lake drained, there they were. And the main reason these, well, the artifacts, but specifically the canoes, the reason they didn't rot was actually because of the acidic, the levels of acid in the water. It prevented whatever eats underwater wood. It prevented this wood from decaying too much. Now, to date, 30 canoes have been found along the northern and western shore, and it's the largest number of canoes found in the southeastern United States. And this part got me. The length of the longest canoe found was 37 feet, so almost 40 foot long. That's a huge canoe. I don't know how many people rode in a 40-foot long canoe. 19 of the canoes have been radiocarbon dated, and they range from 2430 BC to 1480. The oldest canoe in the bunch, the oldest one found, is actually the second oldest in the United States. So the oldest one in there was 2,000 years before the birth of Jesus Christ. So go back to this 40-foot canoe, 37-foot canoe. I had to figure out, like, how do they make these super long canoes? So apparently what they would do was they would cut down a cypress tree and they would split the log in half. And then they would burn the inside of the log. They'd go between burning and scraping. So they'd burn a little bit, scrape it out, burn some more, and scrape it out. And I guess once they got it scraped out or dug out how they wanted, it was ready to go. Now, I tried to find out how they maintained these canoes. I really couldn't find a whole lot. But it said somewhere, I think I didn't take a note of it, but I think I read somewhere that these canoes would last 25, 30 years. They'd be passed down through generation to generation until they were in disrepair and they were shoved off into the lake and they would just make another one. Three of the canoes that they recovered are on display at the Pettigrew State Park. I feel like I'm saying that wrong every time. So as far as I talked about hunters and gatherers, we'll go through some of the Native Americans that went through here. This, of all the Native American history that I use in my episodes, this one here is fairly long. The earliest inhabitants, and I'm not going to pronounce any of this right, but the earliest inhabitants were the late Paleo Indian. The late Paleo Indian period, which was 8,000 to 9,000 BC. They dated this group coming through by arrowheads. I'm not sure how you date an arrowhead, but they did recover some. They figured out how old they were. So during this late Paleo Indian period, the climate was really cold, and Lake Pettigrew or Lake Phelps would have been a pretty new water source at that time. So again, small groups of hunters and gatherers, they'd come to the lake, but they would pass through. They really wouldn't stick around. Then there's the early and middle Archaic period, which is 8,000 BC to 3000 BC. And again, they dated these by spear points. Still, they had temporary camps, but during this time, the climate began to warm up. Resources were more available. And so, though people weren't staying around Lake Phelps long term, they were coming more frequently. The late Archaic period, which was 3000 to 1000 BC, it said that climate back then was very similar to the climate we have today. And there was, like today, plenty of resources around Lake Phelps, even though it wasn't called Lake Phelps back then. This is when people finally started coming here for long term. When I say long term, it was still seasonal. So during the warm months, when hunting was good, they would come in, they would build camps, they would stay for, you know, weeks, months at a time. This is also when the pottery started to appear. Since they were sticking around for longer, they needed a way to cook and live. So that's when they dated the first part of pottery. And they said the three oldest canoes actually belonged to that era. Then there's the early woodland, 1000 to 300 BC. We're getting closer. Two canoes dated to 770 BC. There's two canoes, one dated to 770 BC and one to 900 BC, and they belong to this early woodland period. I didn't have a whole lot of notes about that. Then the middle woodland period, 300 BC to 880, this is when they found settlements where people had stayed pretty long term, more than just seasonal. They would stay for most of the year. They probably, you know, move out toward the winter, and it didn't say, but they probably headed toward Florida in the winter, kind of like we do today. 11 canoes they found belong to this period. The late woodland period, 800 to 1650. Now, 1650, then we're getting into the American timeline that we really know. And my first note says this is when the natives were first met by European explorers. There wasn't a whole lot of occupancy around the lake, that said. It was kind of vacant here. And it was probably because European explorers are coming in. So a lot of the natives probably headed deeper into deeper into the wilderness, you know, to avoid contact with the Europeans. The settlements they did find around the lake were more agricultural based. So now, you know, the hunter and gathering, that's starting to fade out. The natives who are around the lake, they're few, but they are living there full time now. And again, it's more plant-based agriculture, long-term stays. Three of the dugout canoes belong to that phase. By the time the Europeans showed up, like I said, the Lake Phelps area was just about abandoned. All the camps were packed up and moved. There was no more large-scale fishing. There wasn't any big hunting parties coming through. So when the Europeans found it, it looked abandoned, and they described the lake as pristine. Today, I'm done with that. Today, that's getting pretty close to the end of my episode. Today, Lake Pettigrew State Park has all sorts of hiking and camping options. There's swimming and boating. And I've never been down there, I don't think. Because I know myself and I know how much I ride around, I'm sure I've been pretty close to Pettigrew State Park. But to my knowledge, I've never actually visited the park or even seen it. But it sounds like a really cool place. I've seen one of the Carolina Bays, and I can't remember which one it is now, and it was very cool. I got a buddy at work who hunts down east, and he's I don't remember, Madam Mesquite. He's seen one of the Carolina Bays, and again, he said it was something else to see that. But if you ever get down toward Washington County, I would definitely check it out. And if you do, put some pictures on the Facebook page, because I'd love to see it. But that's all I got on Pettigrew State Park. I hope I didn't go through that too fast. As you can see by me tossing my papers around, I didn't have my laptop with me. I decided to print that one out. But it is very late. I am very tired. But that's all I got. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Don't forget to check out the links below. And if you liked the episode, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. And I guess I'll talk to you in a couple weeks.